Welcome to Success Secrets, the podcast where we dive into the inspiring stories of individuals who have overcome obstacles and achieved remarkable success in their professional lives. Get ready to be inspired and discover their secrets to success. Today, we're thrilled to welcome Kieran Savage, founder and managing director of Card Industry Professionals. Since 2017, Kieran has led CIP in revolutionizing card payment systems for SMEs, forging partnerships with industry giants like Zettle by PayPal and Worldpay. Recognized in Forbes 30 Under 30 Finance in 2021, Kieran's leadership continues to shape the future of payments. Join us as we uncover his secrets to success. Hi, Kieran. Welcome to Success Secrets Podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you on. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Great to be involved.
I mean, we've connected over the years. We've been on the Forbes list together and we kept in touch. So it's nice to actually get a one-on-one chat. And I'm really excited to delve into your success secrets and ask you about your story and everything like that. So let me begin with the first question. So to start, can you tell me a bit about yourself, your background, and can you share inspiration behind founding your finance startup and what motivated you to enter into the entrepreneurial landscape in the finance sector?
Yeah, thank you. And I'm sure throughout the conversation, we'll talk a little bit about how we've connected and the Forbes list and everything. But in terms of the start for me, I grew up around the payments industry. So my mum's been involved in the industry for over 25 years. And I was coming in from school with my backpack and she had a big computer in the living room. And I was sitting down, I was hearing the names of people in finance and payments. So as the organizations involved, the type of card payment facilities, machines in businesses. And it just intrigued me. So as soon as I finished my GCSEs, she got me involved in the office she then was running in the UK, processing applications and looking at paperwork and ID and signatures on documents. So it just gave me a good grounding, really, on how to be involved in this world, how to look at applications and speak to sellers as well. So picking up the phone for the first time and having those conversations. So at 16 years old, that's quite daunting. But it gave me a real insight to sort of the world of work or that type of industry. And it kind of then just resonated throughout my 20s. So it moved on to positions in sales, field sales and telesales with different companies in the same industry. By my mid-20s, I felt like there was nothing to lose by trying to create a company, a brand of my own. Actually, for me, the risk was sitting and waiting to try climb the corporate ladder. Felt like it was going to be, you know, waiting on promotions, opportunities, trying to impress the right people. And that felt like it wasn't really in my control. And I felt actually, you know what, come out of that, start from scratch and you'll have the control yourself, the creative control, the opportunity to progress, make something of it. So yeah, that for me was where it all really started, was that I've got nothing to lose mentality.
I love that. And touching back on your background, because I feel like me and you have a similar background journey, which is why we connected in the first place, because we were the only two on the finance list that didn't go to university. So could you tell me a bit more about that? And do you think that helped you to get to where you are today? And like, yeah, tell me a bit more about why you didn't go and what made you choose that separate path?
Yeah, so it's true. And actually, that was quite crazy. That was the first message we sent each other was, oh, we're on the list, but we're the only ones that didn't go to university and we're in finance in the top 30 in Europe. So yeah, a real, real achievement for both of us and hopefully inspiration to others that didn't have the same opportunities or didn't go to university for one reason or another. For me, my own reason was that I finished my GCSEs, did really well at school, spent the 6 weeks summer working and then went to do my A-levels. And during my A-level years, I just felt a little bit conflicted. I felt like I wasn't sure what I wanted to do as a career. I was being pushed towards something, either going to university and doing law or history or something that, you know, really academical that I wasn't too sure whether I wanted, I'd had the patience to sit for 2 or 3 years and study. I wasn't sure. I liked it, but I didn't think I wanted to commit to doing it for the next stage of my education and my life. At the same time, I really enjoyed acting. So I'd been doing this throughout school. I had an agent. I started doing some little bits of auditions. I felt, well, I'm going to go do this, actually, which is completely different to what I'm doing today. But in my late teens, early 20s, that was my aim. I wanted to go do the audition circuit and do different roles. So going to university for me, I kind of rebelled against the idea. It felt like, looking back, actually, it was a little bit naive and a bit foolish to spend my A-level year, you know, trying not to pass my A-level so that I couldn't go to university. In a sense, I jeopardized it, or, you know, for myself. And then, which was fine, I moved forward, finished my A-levels, didn't go to university. And then by the age of 19, I became a father. So I've got a 13-year-old son now. He's at the same secondary school that I went to. So, yeah, as a 19-year-old dad, you've got to grow up quite quickly. So from, 16 to 19, deciding what to do, being a young dad, and then getting into full circle, kind of this same industry I'm in now, was I know it, I've already got experience, I'm knowledgeable, I could sell. So I did field sales. And that was really when I first realized that I could build a brand and a company and sell to any business in the UK, because I was out at 18, 19 years old, face to face, selling to business owners that were 30, 40 years in their business journey. And I was convincing them to change their payments facility. So, you know, they were trusting me, they were putting their faith in me. I was able to lead the conversation. So for me, it was a light bulb moment of other people would follow me, even with my brand, they would come and sign up. So although that kind of laid the path for what became CIP and my own journey sort of 5 or 6 years later. That was my introduction. And it just wasn't an opportunity to then go to university. It didn't feel like a right choice for me. I moved on with the career.
Wow. I love that. And I feel like your journey, I would say, like, it's not traditional and it's not conventional, like it's unconventional, but like I feel like that's where the most interesting stories happen. And that struggle that you faced growing up, like having a child at 19, like you were still a teenager, that's a big challenge, right? You had to grow up so quickly, you had to support someone else. And it's really interesting that you took that on and you made something of yourself as well. And I do have listeners that are young parents, and I do have people that I know that are young parents, and they feel like because they are young parents that they can't achieve that because they see it as an obstacle, whereas you that wasn't an obstacle to you. You just that made you stronger and it took you on that challenge and growth path.
Definitely. And I think when I look back today, me and Riley, my son, we have a great relationship. It's great that he's at the same school I went to now. I can really understand his secondary school journey, and it's not long till he'll be deciding on GCSEs and everything. But for me at the time, you're right, it was really new. So I didn't have much knowledge, or I hadn't had much support or guidance on bills, household bills, getting your first house, renting a house, how to live together as a young couple, how to raise this baby or this child. But you take it one step at a time and you just have to go through it. So, you know, for me, that resulted in me getting to a point where I still felt by my mid-20s, okay, I was on a salary. Like most people, it's just an ordinary salary with a chance of commission. I was going through the motions. And there was, for me, I had a young son at home who was probably 5 or 6 at the time. I had nothing left. I had nothing to lose by trying to build my own company and have a better earning potential or better life for myself in the future. Because if it didn't work out 6-12 months down the line, I could always get a role in telesales or field sales on a similar salary or commission. Once you've got the experience and the knowledge, you can put your hand up or put your CV in a few other companies and somebody will give you an interview and give you a chance to sell. So the real risk, like I said earlier, was to just keep sitting there. That felt like what wasn't best for my son or myself. It felt like I could give a better future by chancing it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, because if you're sitting there, then you're never going to see what else there is, and you're never going to see if you can make a better life for you and your son. So it can makes complete sense. And I love the fact that... Yeah. Oh, sorry, go on.
Yep. I was just going to say on that, because if people are listening thinking, yeah, well, but I can't do that because I've got a house, or I've got a young child, I've got a dependent. You know, I had a young child. He was a dependent. I was having a strong relationship with him. And I just bought our first home. So we had the mortgage payments coming out for the first time when I started CIP. So there was pressure there. It's not like I didn't have it. There wasn't loads of investments sat there or a pot of money to go live off. It was your last paycheck and then using some credit cards and just trying to use some of the money just to pay your half the bills. And even if in that first 6, 9, 12 months, it was just scraping the money for the bills. It wasn't like luxuries, there wasn't extras, there wasn't clothes, there wasn't holidays. But I still, you know, keep a roof over your head, put food on the table, just and between you. And if you're in a relationship, try and support each other. It wasn't a high life straight away. So, yeah, it is tough. And I know people have reservations or could I do it? But for maybe 12 months of your life, I think you can scrape by. I think you might have loads of bills right now, but there's things you can cut out and that you don't need. Subscriptions or gym or memberships that you could probably cut out for 12 months and just pay the essentials. And it can sort of set you up for growth. And if it doesn't, in my head anyway, I felt like I could go back and find a base salary or commission that would give me that level of living again.
And yeah, what I wanted to say was, I love the fact that you also started in field sales and sales, because I also started at sales when I was 18. I was doing like 200 cold calls a day, getting told to F off and everything like that. And I feel like it just really, really grows. Like you just grow so much thick skin that you're like, okay, if I can do this, I can literally do anything, because this is like soul destroying, right?
Yeah.
And also sales, at the end of the day, you have to bring in clients for your business. And what you were doing before, you were bringing in business and clients for that company. So you were probably thinking, okay, if I can do that for them, why can't I do that for me?
Exactly. You're part of you're a small cog in a big wheel, a big engine. And it's trying to then move it so that it's your own engine. You're doing it for yourself. It's your own company. But, you know, exactly those days on teleappointing, telesales or field sales, cold calling, you're making 200 calls a day. You'd have people sat to your left and your right making the same calls and going through a script or talking. And what I found was that my way to stand out was to make fewer calls and actually spend a few minutes before just Googling and doing a bit of research on shops nearby, maybe business owners nearby, the streets nearby, just to try and make it personal. People buy from people. So if I knew that a certain rep, or I was going to be as the rep on that street, because even if I'd researched it, I'd made it up, but I was on that street anyway at 10 o'clock on Friday, and I was seeing this business owner, even if I wasn't, they're more inclined to say, right, okay, well, I can already trust this person. They've already got a bit of reference and they're in the area, and I'm going to give them a chance to come in rather than just a pure cold call. And it felt like for me that seemed to work. So I'd make maybe half the calls of everybody else, but get the same amount of business or appointments. And I think that, again, just showed me it's all about building rapport and trust and common ground with somebody. If you can relate to somebody and you've got something to talk about in common, you can start the sales conversation rather than just a cold call.
Yeah, so true. And I love that you said that people buy from people. And this is what I always tell my sales team as well, that people buy from people they like, know, and trust. So your aim is to be like that person, build rapport, find common ground, find their interests. And it could be about anything. It could be about food, sports.
Yeah.
Go to the spa.
You often mirror their personality or their energy or what they're giving off. And by mirroring it, they're often let the barrier down and build rapport with you quicker. And oftentimes, I'd say this to our sales team a lot, you end up being like an agony aunt, or you stand there and they're talking about the complaints of the local council or the local issue or the footfall or the businesses in the area or something with family, and you end up just sympathizing, understanding and talking, getting to know them, and then it really builds quick rapport and trust. And then talk about the sales process and what I can do to help. But yeah, definitely I agree with you on that one. It's people buy from people, and you've got to find a way to build rapport.
Absolutely. And sales is such an interesting topic because you can be, a lot of people think that sales is talking, 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 but it's really 80% listening. You have to listen so you can understand them and understand them as a person as well, because it's also psychological. And a lot of people think it's about pitching the product, say, like just speaking, but it's, you really have to understand the person, understand what their needs, understand their pain points. And then that's how you can help them.
Yeah, otherwise you're just talking at them, and it's a bit like when we all sit and watch a PowerPoint that we're not really interested in, and it's just slide after slide. You don't take much of it in. As soon as there's a bit of context and emotion in there, and you've built a bridge with them, you know, psychologically or emotionally, you can really start to introduce the pricing or the product or what you're there to do, and they're more inclined to listen to you and give you that extra 1 minute to talk, whereas before, close the door or make some sort of excuse. I think that's really, really vital to a strong sales pipeline and conversion.
Yeah. It's so important to have a healthy pipeline, and especially in finance as well. And I also had an interesting, back to your startup. So building a startup obviously requires a lot of uncertainty and taking calculated risks. Can you share a pivotal moment or decision in your entrepreneurial journey and how it's impacted the direction of your business?
Yeah, sure. And we were talking about this yesterday in a board meeting, that there's so many different decisions we've made over the years, where it's maybe releasing a new product or going into a new partnership or a new sales incentive or strategy for the sales team, that at the time, you know, you pivot towards or you put in place, and looking back, they were so crucial at those points of time. And it's like being opportunistic. So it's the opportune time to launch something new or launch a new partnership to incentivize them and build the morale, and it helps get you to that next level. There's a few over the years. I think one of them that stands out that's quite unique to us, we have a relationship directly with a company called Zettle that's owned by PayPal. So it was Zettle, it was a Swedish company. And they work in the payment space. You might have seen the little white or black Zettle or iZettle readers, different events and pop-ups and markets and festivals. And they're in a lot of hospitality and retail venues now, but they had no partnerships in terms of direct sales partnerships in the UK. And we sat in their London office early in our journey, so end of 2018, and we're only a small little outfit, small group, small sales team, and we were sat there with this company that had been bought for $2 billion by PayPal, and talking about a direct sales partnership and saying, can we go together and work together? And we agreed, and we've worked together 6 years now, so we have, you know, thousands of customers together, generate revenue from PayPal directly. And so, yeah, probably taking a leap of faith, knowing that we'd go to London, have that conversation, feel a little bit out of our depth. But they loved that we were agile, we're young, we're hungry, we had knowledge of the industry. They took a lot from us. They obviously supported our journey as well, and our growth. They invested in the resources and the incentives and sales incentives. So, yeah, that's still going strong today. And that was probably something that other people would have turned away from or turned down, because it was unproven. There was no track record. There was nothing built out. We had to go through probably 12 to 18 months of building processes and a bit of pain to get everything smooth and running effectively. But yeah, we all persevered. And that was probably one of the pivotal moments that helped attract some really strong merchants and strong revenues. And it's helped fund the growth and invest in the team and head office staff and things. So yeah, it's definitely one of the moments that are quite pivotal.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I know Zettle by PayPal, they're huge. And having them on board is just, it's just a stamp to your credibility. Like, okay, this is who we are. We've like, it's just like a proven point that you are doing well and you're successful. And it's given you leverage as well to go after other merchants. So that's amazing. Well done.
Thank you.
And onto your team. So innovation is obviously at the heart of startups and businesses as general. How do you foster a culture of innovation and collaboration within your organization?
Yeah, well, we so our company is very much a people-focused company. So we are not tech savvy overall. The team aren't developers. We've not got loads of web developers and people building software and integrations, but we have really committed and sort of enthusiastic people in the team. So probably the young people in the team, we've always taken people from university or placements or people we know around us or around where we're based in Lincolnshire. And they're so hungry. And I'm thinking of one person in particular who's now our head of operations. Beth is brilliant at innovating. She's always wanted to push automations, integrations, the CRM, the different platforms, the partners we integrate with, speed up workflows. So we've sort of given her the platform and the leverage to be innovative, to try ideas, to test things, to come to the table with suggestions, and other team members as well, but she really stands out. But just having that mentality that everybody's an adult, nobody's going to get told off or treated like a robot. We want to be innovative, we want to speed up processes and find automations or quicker ways of working, smoother ways of working, so it's reliable for the sales team in the field. And work with partners on that. So yeah, I'd probably say that's how we've been innovative. Albeit we're not a room full of tech software developers that are maybe less in touch with the people in the business and the customers. There's a lot of focus on the end user and the end customer. And I think that's what drives our innovation and some of the integrations we do.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, keeping it very customer and client focused is very essential in innovating and pivoting and keeping in mind and listening to what they need and what they require and what their pain points are. That's how you're going to be able to innovate and get to where you need to be much quicker. So great to hear. And on to one of my important topics of my podcast, diversity and inclusion. So it's become an increasingly important topic in finance and fintech and business as a whole. How do you prioritize diversity and inclusion within your organization and team?
We've had a really open-minded approach to this. We've never One of the things, maybe it's because I kind of pushed away from that corporate world and I didn't agree with sort of some of the policies and the governance and the way it was run, the way that you could get promoted or who got promoted. I really didn't like that. For us, it's all about the people and who is best for that role and improve themselves. So, whether it's ethnicity, whether it's inclusion, whether it's the female, male, all sexes. But in terms of where we're at as a company, I think over 60% of our senior exec team's female. I think in terms of actually being raised by a mum in this industry, that was quite unusual. So to have she was head of operations or an operations director in the industry previous, to have a role model as somebody like my mum to look up to and see how she worked with her team meant that I was completely adamant that anybody, whatever level, female, male, would run this company, build this company, be in these exec roles, these head of operations roles, these marketing manager roles. So it's never even crossed my mind to think of any imbalance or whether it's right or wrong. It just that is how it is. And the same just in terms of our overall policies for hiring, it's the person rather than their background or country they're from or ethnicity. That's not it. It's about the experience and the person and how they come across an interview. And for us, we've got quite a strong balanced team. And yeah, hopefully that'll just continue because I don't think we have any other agenda. I don't think, hopefully, and that's I'm hoping other businesses and companies are built like this moving forward. But yeah, not to have that sort of focus on males or white males in suits and sales. That not the way we want to build, and that is not the right for fit for us. And that's not representative of society. So why would our company build like that? It's kind of weird to me. It's a bit old and traditional. So yeah, we're just trying to build and hopefully get it right. And I feel like we have.
I think because at my previous season I had lots of women, but I'm so glad I'm also interviewing men now as well and hearing their thoughts and their advice and everything like that on how they're creating diversity and inclusion within their company. And yeah, it's great to hear what you're involving. And that's probably, I would say, because I've read a lot of statistics, and statistics prove that companies with a more gender diverse board outperform those with a more, for example, male board or anything like that. So it definitely helps, and the proof is there. And your mum's a rock star, by the way.
Yeah, my mum is a rock star. I remember when I was a teenager or working in the office for the summer, and I was 16 and seeing the people she was obviously managing at the time, and how she was coming across with the team. And then throughout my teens, seeing that all the team had respect for her and liked her, would come to her and talk to her and keep long-term relationships with her. That's how I wanted to lead the business and make sure that people felt listened to and empowered and not like a robot. And she's really brought that, and she's obviously set the culture and the tone as well. She's our operations director at CIP, so she came in, she's been in the business 5 years. So she's really helped shape policies and how we've built the company out. So yeah, really grateful for that experience. And for me, there was no question in my mind that some of the ways that she approaches operational processes and partnerships is much more supportive and inducive to a healthy partnership than maybe a male counterpart might. And I think that's probably one of the big benefits.
Amazing. I love that. And yeah, it's so amazing to hear her journey as well. And the fact that she was in the payments industry way before any of this diversity inclusion became super important. She must have some interesting stories as well.
Yeah, it needs to get her on. We'll get her on.
Absolutely. I would love to. So yeah, she's a rock star. I've met her. She's amazing. And on to your entrepreneurial journey. So as we both know, entrepreneurship can be a roller coaster with highs and lows. 1 minute you're high, next minute you're down low screaming. How do you maintain resilience and adaptability in the face of challenges and setbacks?
Yeah, it's something that I've found like maybe tricky over the last few years. And I've mentioned it on LinkedIn, a few posts like quarter one, you come back after Christmas, pipelines have dried up. You've all had a good time with family and friends, but you've got to start again. It's a slow time of year for us because we generate revenue from all the payments processed, and you tend to have less payments in January. People tend to not spend as much. So, and then you have a short month straight after with February. So you've got two short revenue generating months, and you're trying to build pipelines back up. So Q1 for me is always a struggle. It feels like you fall out of habits as well. You might have strong habits with gym and routine and what you're eating and your healthy living. And then you have this Christmas New Year period, and then you're into Q1 and it's dark and cold and wet in the UK. I'm trying to just be mindful of it. I think actually what I've come to realize is there's always going to be some sort of roller coaster or headache or peak of a roller coaster. You're about to go down and through the loop, and it can happen anytime, anywhere. So it's so fluid that you've put out one fire and another one started already, or there's a couple burning in the background, and it's like, oh, okay. And I think that I don't think you'll ever be able to get away from that. Everything I've spoken to or read or seen with other founders as well is that it's exactly the same in their organizations. And you obviously just work hard as a group and a collective to be as strong and build the foundations as solid as possible, and make sure that you keep building and growing. Mm-hmm. But you have to be adaptable. You have to put out the fires and just get ready to turn and move on to the next. For me, if you can just during that find a bit of peace of mind to be able to go home and go to a gym and eat healthy, know that actually the whole world isn't going to crumble. The office isn't just going to collapse overnight. You're okay, you're fine. I think everybody goes through it and there's a challenge like that. But yeah, if anybody isn't and it's really smooth sailing, then I don't think maybe they're either pushing themselves enough or they're in a very competitive landscape, because it must be so simple. and then it makes you question whether there's actually a market for it or that business or that company, because if there was, other competitors would be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. And I always love to say, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. And it looks easy on LinkedIn and social media, Instagram. Quite often there's a lot going on in the background, a lot of ups and downs and challenges. So I think it's trying to just be self-aware of that as well and not put too much pressure on myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, I mean, business is definitely a roller coaster. As you mentioned, like Q1, it's always tough coming back after Christmas and having to deal with like pipelines drying up and the people not processing as much payments or doing as much payments. And yeah, it can be a challenging quarter. I feel like Q2, Q3, Q4 are my favorite ones. I would say Q2 and Q3 because, I don't know, they're just like in the middle. And I feel like Q4 is when everyone starts to wind down again. So yeah.
Q2, Q3. And what in our industry, because we're primarily field sales focused, if we can get to that Easter period, that spring, summer, you start to have longer days, the daylight's there for longer, hopefully some warmer weather, hopefully we have a good summer with some like the Euros and the Olympics on and things, but there's just a better feel-good factor around the sales team, the environment, and also the people we go out and meet. So good to see the back of Q1.
On to, because you mentioned about your personal life and well-being and dealing with the roller coaster of business, how do you balance the demands of entrepreneurship in your finance and with your personal life and well-being?
I found that over the last year especially, you go through a journey, right? So I've now got to a point where we have heads of department and we have a bit of a more built-out team. With direct reports, which, you know, a few years ago was just me in a backpack, you know, you're only thinking of or dreaming of. When you get there, actually, it's really hard to delegate. It's really hard to let go and not be involved in all the meetings still or the conversations. And it takes time. So it's taken about 12 to 18 months of gradually delegating more, having these direct reports, letting them get on with the role and the meetings, and then just feedback the information or come with a request for approval or a decision to be made at board. But that's meant that as I've got used to that and realized that the team don't need me directly as often, we still have catch-ups and we're still going to meetings about serious decisions, but they don't need me day to day. So I'm able to find a balance between my focus on the larger, longer term sort of ambitious goals and the strategy. I'm working with investors and the board, and hopefully finding some form of personal work-life balance where the business is there, the office is there, the team are there, it's still growing day to day, they're really, really strong. I can be on annual leave or I can be working from home like today, and I know that that's still ongoing and I can try to find some balance. So I think getting into a rhythm with the gym in an evening has come back, and I think I need to keep up with that. I think it's good for your mental health and well-being. Finding time with my son as well. So just I've got a very strong routine. I'm trying to keep to that whilst not being overloaded with driving to the office, being sat in the office when I'm not needed all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's probably this year is my focus, is finding that balance between home and the office, and when I'm needed in meetings, when I'm not.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. And yeah, delegating can be difficult, but if you do it right, then I always say delegating is the key to achieving more in life.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, there's so many benefits with delegating.
For sure. And what advice would you give to an aspiring entrepreneur looking to launch their own finance startup or a startup in general based on experiences and lessons you've learned?
I think I probably shouldn't go against my own advice. So I always just in my head thought, just you've got nothing to lose and go for it. And I think the perception is that you need lots of savings or investment. You need to have some strong revenues. I think if you can build a company out and run it alongside your full-time job for the time being for the first 6 months, you can start to get a bit of revenue or some customers. Great. for me as well, it didn't cost the earth. It didn't cost a lot. You register a company, you get a free business bank account, you get free social media handles, set up a LinkedIn page, set up an Instagram page, get an email account with your domain. You might spend £100, but then you've got to put the work and the time in to make that an actual business or a brand or revenue or customers. But actually, in terms of come up with an idea of a company, a logo and things, you can probably do that for £100, and then you can get started in your evenings or your weekends or part-time or however, whatever your situation is as a young person or as a parent or however that may be. Just get started, really. That's my advice.
Just do it. Just go for it.
Go for it and see where you get to.
And yeah, I think it's so important. And when I first started, I feel like I know you mentioned at the beginning that there's an element of naivety there. And actually, that probably benefited us as a whole because we weren't thinking, oh, what about this? What about that? Just overthinking ourselves. We're like, yeah, I'm just going to start a business and see how it goes. So that definitely helps in creating and just being a bit crazy and just going for it, right?
Yeah, definitely. You need to. And you need to have those reservations. That naivety means that you can go into it sort of thinking you're ambitious and you're not limited by like what ifs. I think it's as you get more established and you're thinking of investing in different areas of the business or reinvesting the revenues that you make more calculated decisions at the time when you're getting started. There's nothing to lose, right? Just do as much as you can in for as little money as you can and see if you can start to take off. But always treat it like a business, though. I always treat it like a business. So I didn't treat it as like a passion project or a little side project. This was a business. So even when you're in the early days, sat with a laptop or your iPad, or people have tablets at home, you can use your phone if you've not got access to one. I'd be looking at the email inbox and you'd go a few days without an email, like, because you've got no one to email you. You've got no partnerships, really. You've got no customers. You know, it isn't long until you get to a point where you're getting hundreds of emails a day and you're just skipping through most of them and just cherry picking the really important ones. So, you know, you just got to have faith in that early, in those early days. You've got nothing to lose. You just got to go for it and it'll start to build.
Love it. Love it. And I always say as well that, even if you don't succeed, you fail forward, because everything that you've taken and learned through yourself of building the company, growing, speaking to people, that's, you've grown in that and you've learned a lot of different areas. You've learned skills, you've learned so much, and that propels you to your next journey.
You know, you have to think about marketing. You have to think about your brand, your company design. You've got to think about your tone of voice and emails, your email signature. You've got to think about your Instagram or your post to create some content so you're creative. You've got to think of how to talk to a partner as if you're already an established business and go into a meeting or a Zoom call and talk about your future or your vision. You're always selling. So you're selling to partners, customers, sellers or employees in the future. And for me, that's so important, because if you leave a role, my position was, I had a role, let's say, I can't remember the exact salary, but let's say it was 20,000 a year, a base salary. I was still quite young, early 20s, and you had commission targets. I could either get a salary at that range again, or I probably know more and have more experience from creating this company and other areas of the business to move up a step in the ladder anyway and have a slightly higher base. So I'd kind of be going back to it, failing forwards, like you said, and probably earning more from that experience than just sitting in that same role and having no other experience on my CV.
Absolutely.
There's a benefit.
Absolutely. And also, companies value entrepreneurial people. They love intrapreneurial people as well. If you can go outside of business, they know that you're going to hustle in their business, and you're also going to think outside the box as well. So it's great, I would say.
Yeah.
And lastly, if you could go back in time to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell him?
I would tell him that, you know, when I think of me as 20 years old, I had a one-year-old son. It was probably right in the middle at 20 years old of our first, you know, our rental house bills, trying to understand earning potential. what I'm doing at that stage of life. And I always felt that it would all come together and I would work it out. So I'd probably tell my 20-year-old self to just keep the faith, keep believing that you will figure this out. Your mind is clever enough and smart enough to figure this out. And I know that I work hard. I know that I've been raised to work hard. So it wasn't that I was going to just give up and sit unemployed. And I just felt that at 20 years old, you're so young. When I look back, you're so young. I think Riley is 13, 14 soon. He'll be 20 before I know it, in a blink of an eye. You're still so young, but it feels like you're an adult and you've lived so much of your life, maybe because I was already a young dad. So yeah, I would just say just keep the faith. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. Try different things. Experiment. Try different job roles. Try do a passion project. Try build a company. Try meet people. And don't worry. Don't put too much pressure on this long-term career yet. Just try and meet people and just try different things.
Love it. Trust the process.
Just the process. It'll all come together. Yeah. It might be 5 years from now, it might be 10 years from now, but even then you're still very young.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to finish off the podcast, a couple of quick fun fire questions. Favorite quote?
Favorite quote. Fortune favors the brave, because I've got it in Latin tattooed down my side. It was one of the first tattoos I got. And I always think back to it. Like, I've had to take risks. I've had to take chances. You could call it brave or bold or foolish. But I've always felt that you have to at least put yourself out there and go for it.
Yeah,
so I'd probably go with that.
Fortune favors the brave. I love that one. That's good. Most inspiring person?
There's a few, you know. For me, at the minute, anyway, I go through different phases. At the minute, I'm really inspired by other British entrepreneurs. So I'm looking at people of a similar age or similar length of time in business to me. And some of those people that maybe I'm aspiring towards or building a company or brand towards. So some of the people like Ben Francis, like Grace Beverly, like Stephen Bartlett, like people that are building strong British brands, mm-hmm. and I'm seeing the success they're getting. And maybe one thing as a business owner or founder is when you go through like the Forbes 30 and the 30 list and things, you meet so many young entrepreneurs and founders. There's no judgment around trying to be better than the other person. Like for me anyway, looking into it, and I think you're the same and other people are the same, you're trying to celebrate them and want them to achieve.
Yeah.
It seems like more like I want them to do better and build and get better revenues and stronger opportunities. There's no resentment or envy there. And I think that only comes when you're building your own, you're confident in your own process, your own company, your own product. And so, yeah, it's a strange thing, but that's probably who inspires me right now is the other British entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I see that for sure. And they're around our age and they're doing super successful, so we can look up to them and get inspired by them and hear their stories, right? Because they have amazing stories. I like that a lot. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on my podcast, Kieran. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and we know our listeners will thoroughly enjoy this, and I'm sure they can take a lot from this as well.
Brilliant. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.